Saturday View on Midlands 103. With thanks to Lumcluen Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. Lumcluenenergy.com. Have your say. Call 0818 300 103. Text or WhatsApp your Saturday View to 083 3010 103.
Hello and a very good morning to you. Ronan Berry here with you on Saturday View. Coming up on the show between now and 11 o'clock, there is a brand new agency set up to oversee the implementation of our new directives and legislation, and really, I guess, to change perceptions and change our approach to domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. A new committee has been set up on that, a new board, and the Midlands has a very prominent member of that. They'll join me at around 10:30 to talk about their role and talk about their objectives and indeed the objectives of the group at large. Also, why are so many journalists moving, leaving that Fort Estate and heading into the actual realm of political advice? At the minute, there are 12 political advisors, or the advisors to government ministers, that come from a journalistic background, and not just dabbled in journalism for a while. People who have taken senior roles with many newspapers, actually were based in Leinster House as senior political correspondents. Even former editors of national newspapers have taken up roles. It's not something that's confined just to Ireland, and it has always happened, but not to the scale that it currently happens. And I suppose it does ask that question, and it's a question that Justine McCarthy asks in an opinion piece in the Irish Times yesterday. Will that have a negative, number one, effect on journalism? Because if the people who are put in to report on the exact workings of what's going on are now working for the government, is that fair? Is that based at a time when there's so much talk and labels and tags such as mainstream media put at many organisations, particularly organisations that try to bring balanced approach and bring both sides of stories out to the people through media, through radio, through newspapers, whatever it might be? Will that relationship be compromised? Will people look differently on journalism? Or is it just a fact of life? Is it the kind of shiny stick or the carrot of better, maybe better pay, better conditions? Is there something about maybe there's just that desire to get in-house and work and see can you effect change from inside as well? Who knows what it is, but it's something I'm going to examine with Justine McCarthy a little bit later in the show too. But before that today, I'm going to turn to that topic of really retrofitting. And earlier this week, you would have probably heard it announced that a new low-interest loan scheme has been made available by the government, and its aim is to support homeowners to become more energy efficient. You will be able to borrow between 5,000 and 75,000 at significantly lower interest rates to heat your home at a cheaper cost. Now, I guess the big question across the Midlands, is that something that interests you? Well, Midlands 103 on Wednesday had a piece up on their news items, and it was shared on our Facebook page. And I took a quick look at a lot of the comments on it there this morning, and some of them are quite negative on it as well. One person pointed out that there's no such thing as a low-cost heating system under capitalism. Somebody said it's basically now you'll have a mortgage on your house and you'll have a mortgage on your heating system. Other people, though, welcoming the scheme, saying what they like about it is that it breaks it down into different components. That, firstly, rather than have to go and do a full deep retrofit, which... And if you have experience of this, if you've had it done recently or you've been pricing it up, would you please text me on 083 3010 103 or WhatsApp me. Let me know roughly what it costs. You can remain anonymous. I don't have to read your name out. But I'd love to know, what is the typical cost of a deep retrofit for a three-bed bungalow across the Midlands? Because when it comes to borrowing that money, one person has also pointed out by texting me this morning that it is like having a mortgage on your house, but also a mortgage on your heating system too. Is that true? Is that what's happening out there? Are you noticing that? Please let me know, 083 3010 103. If you want to come on and talk to me about that, give us a call on 0818 300 103. Nelly will take your call, and who knows, we might even get you to come on air about that. But yeah, it definitely is something that is... rankling people. It's definitely caught people's attention as well. So, like, are you going to look at those loans? Are you going to look at smaller modifications? Because this allows for up to two smaller energy upgrades to take place, all with the goal ultimately of trying to reduce the overall energy consumption, make warmer houses cheaper, make them cheaper to heat, and make them more safe is actually some of the narrative coming from it as well. Now, some of the different lenders, Permanent TSB are the first lender to come out and say that they would support the scheme. They're offering interest rates, I think, in the region of about 3.3%. It's widely, 3.55%, apologies. It's widely expected AIB, Bank of Ireland, Avant Money and seven credit unions from the Irish League of Credit Unions will probably join that list too, and who knows, probably even more after that too. So it does look like it's been put in. There's got good intentions behind it. The big question is, will it grab your attention and will it compel you to start going and looking at how you can retrofit your house? Well, when asked to comment on it there the other day, Junior Minister Pippa Hackett says the scheme is a win-win for everyone.
This is the final piece of the retrofitting jigsaw for those households who sit above the income threshold for free energy upgrades, but who don't have the savings to do the scale of the retrofit they would like. Homes will be healthier, warmer and more energy efficient, and the savings householders can make in utility bills will help cover the cost of the loan.
And do you think that, if you were to retrofit your house, so if you were to borrow at the higher end of that scale, 75,000 at a low interest rate, remember that's not a grant. Now, there are, of course, SEAI grants available for some of these things too. And again, we'll hear a little bit more about those in just a couple of minutes. But if you were to borrow at that money, would that convince you that, right, you know, given the cost of fuel now, if you're on oil, if you're likely on solid fuel, are you noticing it harder to get access to turf, to timber? Are you dependent on imported products? Are you dependent on kind of log substitute products as well? What's the cost like on that? Are you using wood pellet stove? Is that getting more expensive? Do you think if you retrofit your house, it will pay back? You will get the payback in the long run. Let me know, please. Now, a little bit more about this. When this came to news the other day, the Friends of the Earth, now a little bit about them. It's a community at the heart of the growing movement here for a world with zero pollution. Friends of the Earth are part of the world's largest grassroots environmental network and have celebrated its 50th anniversary in 2021. Friends of the Earth Ireland is a company limited by guarantee. It's a not-for-profit company and it's sustained by donations, subscriptions and grants. And it released a press release after the announcement of this low energy upgrade grant scheme the other day. And at large, it kind of welcomes it, but it describes it as an initial but partial step in ending household dependency on expensive, polluting fossil fuels. To look a bit deeper into this, I'm delighted to be joined by Claire O'Connor from Friends of the Earth. Very good morning, Claire.
Good morning.
Claire, take us through this. You've described it, as I say, as a partial step, as an initial but partial step in ending household dependency on expensive fossil fuels. It doesn't go far enough then in your book, is that fair to say?
I think so, yeah, yeah. And you know, it's actually brilliant to hear the feedback from your listeners on this as well. So I hope more people do actually call in to share their experience, because we'll be listening in. But it does broadly align, I think, with our own thoughts about it. So Friends of the Earth have been campaigning for the government to make retrofitting and heat pumps a lot more accessible to most people, because as we know, for a large majority of Irish households, it's not really accessible in its current format. You still require this really big upfront capital, really, to be able to access it. And we've been campaigning so that all households, regardless of their income levels and regardless of their home ownership status as well, are able to feel the benefits of retrofitting, like warmer homes and lower energy bills and even lower pollution and all the health benefits that come with that as well. So we do welcome this new low-cost loan scheme, and it is one positive step towards kind of making warmer homes for everyone a reality. But I would disagree with Minister Hackett there when she says that it's the final piece of the retrofit jigsaw, because I still think there are going to be people that can't access this. And I think hearing from your listeners there that it's like another mortgage on their heating systems, like that's a big barrier, I think, for a lot of people. A lot of people aren't able or willing to access that kind of credit as well. And SVP would have been saying that for the past number of years, that for people who can't access credit, who can't get a loan, basically, that we need to focus on expanding the free retrofit scheme, which is called the Warmer Home Scheme. And that currently provides a free, full, deep retrofit to people who are receiving specific social welfare payments. And I think what the government needs to look at now is really expanding that warmer home scheme. There's still people on the disability allowance who can't get it. And we're still seeing people who are in the private rental sector completely locked out of that, you know. So one of the things that we've been calling for is this free retrofit scheme, that it expands to include, HAP tenants as well, on the condition that they're offered a longer term lease, so that they get to actually see the benefits of the retrofit as well. So it is a partial step, but probably wouldn't agree with Minister Hackett that it's the final piece, because as you're hearing from your listeners, it's not everyone's going to be able to access this and benefit from it, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's a one question. One side of it is people may not be able to access that because it is a substantial sum of money if you were to borrow, particularly at the higher end of that. I think as well, it'd be very interesting if we could gauge people's appetite for it too, because there's probably people listening who have been burning solid fuel for 70, 80 years and they'll see no point in changing. And there's probably people then in younger age brackets who are saying, well, hang on now, if I can get X amount of fuel for, say, €2,000 a year, if I take out a loan for 70, 80,000 and have to pay that back and still ultimately have to pay for the energy to run a heat pump and stuff like that, I think it's going to be a harder sell for people as well. But when it comes to those people on lower incomes too, again, you're kind of suggesting that this doesn't go far enough for them. And you've quoted in your press release a kind of an example of what the Dutch government have done.
Yes. So over in the Netherlands, they have been offering a loan for the past couple of years, and it's targeted to families and households who are on less than €60,000 per year. And that's a zero interest loan in that case. So I think that could be maybe another kind of way of filling that gap for the people who can't maybe access the 3.55%. So looking at the people on the lower incomes, who ultimately, like, in this investment will be a much bigger burden on them, really, more so than people who can already afford it, you know. So I think overall this is quite a positive step, because we do need lots of different financial options for people to actually get involved in this, because ultimately they've set a target of retrofitting 500,000 homes by 2030, and that is the actual ambition that we need to actually, like, bring down our emissions, to reduce our energy use and ultimately get us off fossil fuels. So the level of, like, ambition the government has set here is correct. They now need to make sure that they're plugging all those gaps and that every single person, regardless of their income, can actually access those. And I think the Dutch government are showing leadership in that way with the zero interest loans. And I think that they also need to target the private rental sector. I'm sure there's people listening here who are tenants, and they obviously don't really have the agency to do that retrofit piece now at the moment. It's really on their landlords. The landlords can actually access this new low-cost loan, which is a positive thing. But what we need to see as well is the stick from the government, I think, too. In the Housing for All policy that came out, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago at this point, they said that they would introduce minimum BERs, building energy ratings, in the private rental sector from 2025. We're now 4 months into 2024 and they haven't really announced that yet. You know, landlords haven't been notified, tenants haven't been notified. And we need to, if they're going to be doing that, we need to see protection for tenants so that people aren't getting what they call rent evictions, basically, where they would get evicted so that the household, that the home can be retrofitted by the landlord. So I think we need to see a plan for that, and the government also need to kind of reiterate their commitment to introducing those minimum energy performance standards in the private rental sector, so we're not homeowners who or tenants who are kind of at the mercy of the housing crisis at the moment also be still stuck paying much higher energy bills and in cold homes, which is ultimately bad for the environment, but really bad for people's health as well. So I think that's a really, really big gap that needs to be filled as well.
I think when you mention the terms like rent evictions, that'll certainly make people sit up, because I can only imagine if you were a tenant in a house, you probably would be petrified of your landlord coming to tell you they're going to renovate the house. Because, and I think I'm correct on this one, I believe that if you had a house rented and it was in a rent pressure zone, you can only raise the rent by something like 4% year on year if it's in that rent pressure zone. However, if you can upgrade the house or take it up to the next level, or indeed the highest level of energy rating, you can actually go back and go at market price as well. So, I mean, this could actually open up a whole other suite of issues for renters.
Exactly. And that discussion isn't being had really at a government level at the moment, and it absolutely has to be had, and it has to be prioritised. Like, there, a balance does have to be struck between retrofitting homes but protecting tenants as well, and I think they need to be a lot more explicit about that and to start to have those conversations and getting really clear on what tenants' rights are, what the protections are, but also what landlords are going to be obligated to do under these new BERs that are supposed to be coming in early next year, hopefully.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, and further complexities. But Claire O'Connor, Energy Policy Officer with Friends of the Earth, thank you so much for that this morning. And loads of texts coming in as well. So stay tuned, Claire, and I'll read out some of those as I go through the programme. But again, what are your thoughts on that? Is it something retrofitting? Is it something that's actively in your agenda? It's something that you say, I want to do in the next couple of years. Or is it something that you're just saying, you know what, enough of that, you know what, I'm not even going to look at that now. I'm going to stick as I am. I've never been cold in my house, so nobody's going to change my mind on that. Somebody has texted in to say that they're going down the one-stop shop route with Electric Ireland. They don't have the costings yet. They should have them early next week as well. But said that they're eager to avail of the retrofit loan because it means they can keep their savings to send their children to college, as it's cheaper than a student loan. So that's a really interesting way of looking at this too. So therefore, obviously, that listener was clearly considering this, looking at how they could go about financing that and seeing this maybe as a better option than, I say, taking out a student loan in time, which we all know there can be huge interest rates on that. Then there's other factors we need to consider, such as comfort and environmental responsibility, which you just can't put a price on. That's, again, that's really, really interesting, you know, that. And Claire is touching that there too. It's about cleaner homes, better homes, more energy efficient. But ultimately, if every house in an urban environment was on a heat pump or was retrofitted, then you're not going to have those kind of smoke and particulates coming out of the chimneys, which again are causing air pollution as well. That's of course looking at it. In the Irish case, we can go to parts of the world where retrofitting is probably the last thing on their minds, and more coal-fired power plants are the main focus there. But anyway, good to see action being taken. Keep your text coming in. 083 3010 103 is the text and WhatsApp number. Time quick break. After that, we're going to look at a new agency that is set up to oversee the improvements when it comes to domestic sexual and gender-based violence in across Ireland. Right now, across the Midlands, though, it is 8 degrees.
Saturday View on Midlands 183 with thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com.
You're very welcome back to Saturday View. Later on, I'm going to have a look with Justine McCarthy from Irish Times as to why are so many journalists and former political analysts and journalists now jumping ship and starting to take up roles as senior advisors with many, many government ministers. It's a trend that is growing and growing rapidly. And again, at what cost or indeed at what will that do for actual journalism? You know, at a time where we hear terms like mainstream media being, pointed out and used extensively, we often get texts here to Midlands 103 suggesting the same thing, particularly if you're trying to bring a balanced approach on a story. And we all know if you go online, you can go off down a channel and you can get down a foxhole of just getting the views. I mean, ultimately, that's what those big social media algorithms do. They feed back to you the very stuff they think that you want. If you want to find more of that and you want to confirm biases, social media is probably the best place to do that. So stay tuned to your good old radio and your national newspapers and that credible journalists if you want balanced an opinion. But anyway, we'll look at that a little bit closer later on in the show. But before that, back in April, Minister Helen McEntee announced the establishment of the Board of Cooin. Now, Cooin is a statutory agency under the remit of the Department of Justice dedicated to tackling and reducing domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. They announced a whole stream of new board members who were appointed following an open and competitive process, and they will report directly to the Minister for Justice. Some of those members are Professor Caroline Fennell, who will chair the board, Sarah Benson, Denise Charlton, Vivian Geeran, Conor Hanley, Claire Loftus, and there's a Midlands representative on that in the form of Molly Buckley. Now, many will be very familiar with Molly. She's a public health nurse by profession, and she's worked extensively in community development and family support services, and she's an equality and disability rights activist. She's the former CEO of the Irish Wheelchair Association, chair of the Offaly Domestic Violence Support Service, chair of the Rights for the Elderly Voluntary Housing Association Limited, and chairperson of Power for Good Ireland Limited too. Again, I spoke to Molly actually on this show in January, speaking about as people get towards retirement, about remaining active and keeping vibrant and using that energy and experience you have. And here's another indication of Molly continuing to do that. Very good morning, Molly.
Good morning, Ronan. Nice to talk to you.
Molly, this is I can imagine this appointment brings a lot of pride to yourself.
Well, it does, Ron. I suppose it's a huge honour to be appointed. As you said, it was an open competition. I applied to public jobs in December last year and thought that was it, and that was fine. So it's a huge honour, and it's a huge recognition of the work being done by so many services around the country, including our own and my own, that I would have been a founder member of, Offaly Domestic Violence Support Service. So it's a huge honour, it's a huge responsibility, but it's great to see this in place. And indeed, Ronan, you did work yourself as part of the Rotary Club, and it was very much appreciated and very, very positive work. So it sort of highlights that it's not just any one group or any one person. It's a whole community response that's needed to eradicating and reducing and recognising domestic, sexual and gender-based violence.
And of course, a very wide, very vast subject, and the need for kind of an oversight body on it was apparent, because there were so many local organisations across Offaly, the Midlands and right across the country,
yes,
probably all really doing their best and really kind of,
yes,
you know, basically moving mountains to provide that service. What will this,
yes,
new oversight, what will Coolin do, do you think, in terms of bringing those together and delivering even better service?
Yeah, well, you're right, Ronan. So many services doing good work. I suppose one of the biggest things of all is that there'll be a robust set of national service standards and governance arrangements. So it will be a standardised service right throughout the country. Like with a lot of services, as you know, it might depend where you live. You know, there might be a better service in one part of the country and not in the other. And the huge difference between urban and rural. I mean, somebody isolated in a rural area has different needs to somebody living in an urban area, but yet the same standard has to apply, and sort of outreach services. And so many aspects of this service is going to be taken under, as you said, under one agency. And also I suppose there's four pillars, as you know. There's prevention, protection, prosecution and policy coordination. And the prevention is so important, like the, you know, working towards eradicating the social and cultural norms that underpin and contribute to gender-based violence. And raising public awareness, I have to say, from the time I got involved in 1997, the awareness now is so much better. When I got involved first, people didn't want to see us. I mean, we were shunned, really. We were the bad people coming around talking about this that should have been kept quiet. Do you know what I mean? But thankfully, that has improved and will improve more. And as well as that, Coon will oversee prevention in terms of encouraging men and boys to contribute to actively preventing for all forms of violence. I think there's a ribbon campaign planned. And also, to encourage bystanders to recognise behaviours and to take action when it's safe to do so. Things like pornography, the harm that causes, the need for safe spaces, you know, public lighting and public transport is another area. I mean, there's so many aspects, so many things involved that will help to prevent and make life safer for women and for men, and workplaces as well. So, and training will be so important for everybody, not just for people who are delivering the service, but so many others. And education, indeed, in schools, age-appropriate education. So it's a huge remit. But there's a very good CEO. The board, we will have our first meeting on the 9th of May. I know an awful lot more after that, Ronan, but there's a very good board with experience in all aspects.
Yeah, you've really kind of painted a beautiful picture of maybe the complexity and the scale of it there when you just mentioned all those various aspects of life,
yes,
different age groups,
yes,
different demographics,
yes,
and you begin to see maybe why you board. The board itself, its main functions are to provide the strategic direction to the agency, to promote,
yes,
those high standards of corporate governance, to, you know,
yes,
advise or make recommendations to the minister in relation to policies and to adopt,
yes,
the annual report. Personally, what can you bring? Are there any things within your role? Have you any personal objectives, you know, from your own experience that you want to try and bring to the,
yes,
fore?
Yeah, well, as always, I know we'll have people there from all sorts of backgrounds. And again, bringing together all the ideas are crucial. But I hope that I would bring my own, well, not quite a lifetime of work with domestic violence issues, but just recognising the complexity, as you said yourself, I think we all recognise that. But the work that's been done, I think I've seen over the years the effect the work and the support work has on staff. I mean, they do get support, they do get guidance and you know, supervision, but it's a very difficult area to work in. And I mean, this particular type of person that can do it, but never sort of accepting that that's the case. The support for staff, the funding, of course, which has improved and of course, will improve a bit more, hopefully, because I remember times in Offaly Domestic Violence Support Service and we thought we'd have to wind up with so little funding. But I have to say that the community and the public have always been very good to us and recognised the work that's been done. I suppose one of the big things, Ronan, and it's one that I'd be passionate about, is the increase in the refuge spaces. And the hope is to increase refuge spaces, double the number to 280. And in Offaly, we're working on the steering group working on the provision of a refuge. So as it is, there are three safe houses in Offaly, which is a huge development. So I suppose from my point of view, is recognising the great work that's been done, valuing the people who are doing it, and hope and increasing the number of safe spaces, and ensuring that people will get the service they need when they need it, an immediate response, because there's nothing as bad as somebody needing a service, and maybe, I'm not saying this happens now in Offaly, or maybe it doesn't happen anywhere, but any service, and that they might have to wait. So it might be increasing staff and services, increasing services throughout the country, and definitely the whole coordination and collaboration will have a huge benefit.
Absolutely. And again, bringing under that single agency, hopefully will deliver there too. But like as you've pointed out, there are huge, massive development, massive improvements in a short space of time, but clearly
Absolutely.
More work to do. But wanting that kind of comes across very is your passion for it. Yeah. And undoubtedly a great appointment for the role. And look at Molly, we'll hear a lot more from you over the coming years on that one.
Well, yes, Ronan.
Congrats on your appointment.
Well done, you know, on the work you're doing there, but also on the work you did with Rotary. And congratulations to Rotary as well. You do great work, but you played a major role in that report. So well done to you also.
Thank you, Molly. A pleasure as always. Yeah. And that was actually the Tullamore Rotary Club put together a submission to the it was a 2022 submission to domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. And it was open for public consultation, and the club gathered the thoughts and sentiments of 55 organisations around Tullamore, put them together a submission and actually presented them to Minister Helen McEntee at the time. And all that's where the agency Coon is coming from. I don't mean directly from the report, but it's bringing all those different agencies, different groups, different organisations, different voices, different perspectives under one hat, and hopefully trying to really help and work and ideally eliminate domestic, sexual and gender-based violence once and for all. And Molly Buckley has been appointed to the board of that. And she said her first meeting takes place on the 9th of May. And all the very best to Molly in that role. Time for a quick break. After that, we'll look at why journalists are taking up roles as specialist advisors for government ministers.
Saturday View on Midlands 183. With thanks to Lumclune Energy. Pioneering innovation. Powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com.
One of our listeners, Joe Carroll, texted in and rang us here to say that he had been approved for an energy upgrade grant, but a potential issue may have arisen with the contractor. Joe joins me on the phone. A very good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Roland. Thank you.
Joe, where are you? Are you around Kilcormac, is it?
Kilcormac area, yes, sure. Right.
Joe, yeah. Tell us what happened. Yeah. So you got approved for a grant to upgrade, for an energy upgrade. What happened after that?
The contractor called to check out the house and to see what work he had to complete. And when he called me back to inform me about the situation, everything was okay. But he reckoned that he may not be able to enter the attic because of to upgrade the insulation in the attic because of the asbestos slates. And I said to him, really, sure, you won't be touching on the slates. But he says, He may not be able to risk putting his employees into the attic. So it rests like that. I don't know anything further. I think he was to check it out. But you see, my hands are tied because I cannot say too much to him over the situation, because he would have a lot of work on hands and he could walk. So it kind of defeats the whole idea of the retrofitting if the attic isn't insulated.
Yeah, and I've heard of other instances where maybe people can't get access to it, or there are certain factors. And I think the one thing that your point proves is that not every house is automatically applicable for an energy upgrade in terms of insulation. But you raise a valid point. If you're not actually breaking or touching the slates, then they shouldn't present a risk. And it is, and sure. I suppose it leaves you in a kind of a complex situation. But I'm sure other people have had similar experience, and we might hear from them this morning as well. But Joe, thank you so much for your call this morning.
Thanks, Ronan, and thank you for that. Okay, thank you.
So if you're in a similar, thanks, Joe, if you're in a similar position and you found that actually happening with yourself, that you had options for energy upgrades, but all of a sudden then it was taken away because of some other conditions. Let us know, 083 3010 103, the Lamb Brothers Toyota and the Arden Road Tullamore text and WhatsApp number. Now, going back to that story I mentioned at the start of the show there, and this was featured in the opinion piece in the Irish Times yesterday. It was written by Justine McCarthy, and Justine was highlighting the number of senior journalists, you know, particularly political journalists, many of whom were based in Leinster House, who have jumped ship effectively and started working for senior political advisors. The current headcount is about 12. And Justine wrote a great extent about this in the Irish Times yesterday, and she said how it used to be kind of a rare thing. And as we often say, what's rare or seldom is wonderful. But it's becoming such commonplace now that the list is growing really, really longer. And I suppose, does that have implications for good old-fashioned proper journalism, to make sure that the right stories, the right approach is being brought out by journalists like that? And what happens when they then go working for the very political people that maybe they were once trying to expose or put some heat on as well? It's a very interesting one, so let's dig a bit deeper with Justine herself. Very good morning, Justine.
Good morning, Ronan.
Justine, is this a relatively modern phenomenon? Or I know you've said in your article it happened in the past, but is it something that in the last while has really just kind of taken off?
Yes, it has. It's really taken off. Going back, I suppose, to even back as far as the 1980s, there would have been the very rare and occasional journalists, mostly from RTE, you know, people with high profiles, who would have made that move over the years. And in the last, I would say, maybe 7 or 8 years, it has really, that trickle has turned into a flood. And I've never seen as many journalists make the move as in the last, I suppose, during the lifetime of this government. So that the total number at present of journalists who are advising government ministers comes to 12. And of those, 8 of them were political editors, correspondents and reporters based in Leinster House. And one was the editor of a national daily newspaper.
Obviously, significant appointments. I did notice one article from the UK in 2020 where current PM Rishi Sunak appointed a former editor of a newspaper, a good friend of his as well, into his cabinet as a specialist advisor. So it's not just an Irish phenomenon either. But you go on in your article yesterday to say, though, that those who are supposed to be the watchdogs for the public interest become the guard dogs at the gates of government. Is it a big leap, do you think, in that journalist's head? Is that something that people will really mull over and they know that maybe, right, they're putting a previous career, they're putting all that kind of aside to take up this new role? Or is it something that maybe somebody just feels naturally drawn to and therefore they'll leap at that opportunity?
Yeah, I think there's a number of reasons, Ronan, for it. I think people may have a natural curiosity and want to see how the system works from inside. That might be one of the motivations. Another is that journalism, despite, you know, the publicity about RTE star salaries, journalism is a relatively low-paid occupation, and there isn't much scope for promotion because there are very few news organisations. And people, when they get into their 30s and 40s, they have family responsibilities and more financial obligations. So there are all those reasons why people would make the move. But I think that essentially, you know, to work as a journalist and to work as a government spin doctor are the antithesis of each other. Being a journalist means holding politicians to account, exposing wrongdoing, analysing, probing, investigating policies and motivations. Whereas once you make that switch to the other side, your job is entirely to enhance the image of the minister you work for, to really deal with colleagues that you had worked with side by side on the press gallery, you know, maybe the week before or the month before, to deal with them and try to put the best spin possible on stories involving their ministers. There's a difference between, you know, there are civil service PR departments in each government department. And I'm not talking about those people. Their job is to answer questions directly on the record. I'm talking about the media advisors to government ministers, and their job is more background briefing of journalists, maybe tipping off journalists about stories that will project their minister in a positive light. So it is really, you know, a matter of the poacher turning gamekeeper. I just want to make absolutely clear that I'm not criticising any of the individuals who have made that change. And as I say, there are good reasons for it. But it's the cumulative effect of so many people now moving. I think it really damages the perception of journalism at a time when journalism is, as somebody said to me recently, a dirty word, and there is low public trust and increasingly low public trust in what we do. So I do believe that not only is our responsibility to tell the truth, but we have to be seen to be telling the truth.
And of course, you went on to mention in the article that critics of the so-called mainstream media are wont to castigate journalists as politicians, nodding dogs, mere note-takers for government propaganda. And that really, and I fully appreciate as well, yeah, you're not criticising these people. People are free to make their own decisions on these type of things. But in terms of that whole persona or perception of the mainstream media, it's not helping that either.
It's not, no. And there are people who will exploit this as well, to further undermine the credibility of journalism. So I do think that as journalists, we have to take some sort of action to guard ourselves against this perception. I worked as a political correspondent in Leinster House, and I've worked in Leinster House, you know, on and off over decades. And I have always felt uncomfortable about the physical proximity of political reporters and politicians within that environment. Now, it's hard to see how you can police that, because you do need to have journalists working in the National Parliament building, covering, you know, the day-to-day events, meeting politicians, talking to them, finding out what's happening, you know, talking to politicians in corridors and corners and in the bar downstairs. That's all part of the job. But it's very easy to cross that line between, you know, your professional relationship with the politician and to where you become a friend of a politician. And I have seen a tiny minority. Now, I have to say the vast majority of my colleagues, you know, work to the highest standard and have utter integrity. But I have seen a tiny minority cross that line where they have become, they have socialized with politicians. So I think maybe, you know, newspaper editors and broadcasting bosses need to start laying down some specific rules to govern how their journalists operate within Leinster House.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because that also is, sorry to interrupt, Ronan, but that's also the environment where these job offers arise, you know, where they're made and accepted, for journalists to switch from what we call the fourth estate over to government buildings.
Yeah. And undoubtedly, you know, if there is that element of socialising or, you know, meeting for a pint or just being in those similar circles, like there's that old thing of keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. But you say if it develops into more of a friendship without it being officially an actual advisor role, then maybe questions should be answered there. But when it comes back to maybe a journalist making that leap and actually working for a government advisor as an advisor or politician, is there kind of a Tiernanogue element that once you cross over, there's no going back?
Well, some people have gone back, and they've gone back quite successfully. People who have been, well, I can think of one who was a government press secretary and another who was the press officer for a political party. And they are both working for national newspapers back based in Leinster House. and doing very good jobs. But I think that if we expect politicians to take what's called gardening leave after they quit Leinster House before going to work as lobbyists, we should examine our own conscience and maybe question whether we as journalists need to do the same thing. There is a natural kind of symbiotic relationship between journalists and politicians. I think we do enjoy each other's company. As political journalists, we wouldn't be doing that job if we weren't quite fascinated by politics and by the people who go into it. And, you know, we do share a love of news, politicians and journalists. We want to find out from each other what's going on. So it's very easy to fall into the trap of becoming a friend rather than a contact.
That's quite an interesting one too.
Once you're out of the job, that's fine.
That, absolutely, yeah, I think your point about garden leave is a well-made one too. But of course, one thing actually, like, you know, in journalism, you know, whilst maybe some reports will say that the salary wages may not be as high as a political advisor, you know, governments can fall and collapse very quickly. Ministers can fall out of favour. So it's not exactly stable either. But Justine, a fascinating piece. And thank you so much for coming on this morning. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
You're very welcome, Ronan.
That's Justine McCarthy there from the Irish Times. And that's really it from Saturday View for this morning. Thank you so much to Claire O'Connor from Friends of the Earth, and for local man Joe Carroll coming on as well, talking about his experience with those kind of retrofitting or energy upgrade grants, to Molly Buckley, who has been appointed to the board of COON, that agency that will oversee domestic, sexual and gender-based violence across the country, and to Justine McCarthy there too, speaking about when journalists cross that line and become advisors for senior political figures. It's happening more and more often. And will it continue apace, or what will happen? And she raised an interesting point there around potential garden leave. So if a journalist has worked for a politician, should there be a period where they can't work as a journalist again? Interesting times anyway. But that's it for me. Thank you so much. I'll be back in the hot seat in Saturday View next Saturday morning. Stay tuned. Lorraine McCormack is coming up after 11 with Feel Good Saturday. And big thanks to Nelly, as always, for working away diligently here behind the scenes, putting it all together, lining up the calls and answering all your texts. Thank you, as always, for texting in. Lots of you have huge, great opinions on the retrofitting thing. Kind of very, very kind of not even 50-50. A lot of you are kind of saying you're not ready to start looking at that yet. You're kind of happy with the way things are. Maybe we'll hold off for a while. Other people suggesting that at least it's given options and it's given a chance to maybe start doing some basic energy upgrades on the house without having to look down that line of the deep retrofitting, which could come quite costly. Anyway, I'll talk to you all next Saturday. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Talk to you soon.
Saturday View, with thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumcluneEnergy.com. Bedlands 1.